Whether you're a Class 5 rafter or just looking for a couple of laughs, these two have you covered. Welcome to Aaron and Zach's Better Than Mediocre Rafting Show.
Welcome to Aaron and Zach's Mediocre Rafting Show. We're more than mediocre this week because we have Cody. Welcome to the show, Cody.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, of course. Cody has another YouTube channel, our competitor. We're fierce competitors, Private Whitewater.
It's a little bit better than Zach's Rafting Show. So obviously, we're here to steal those people away to the really good education.
Yeah, that's not hard to do. And for those of you that don't know, you can just quit this right now. This is a mediocre plus show, but you should just turn this off right now and go to Cody's channel on YouTube. Search for Private Whitewater. You'll see it. You should subscribe, watch a bunch of his videos. He has great, great information out there. Right?
Yeah. It's better. I think what's hard is a lot of people watch you raft on your videos and you make it look way too easy. So come watch somebody that's like a normal human being.
And come on.
We'll make a few I make a little bit more mistakes.
We all make mistakes. Yes. It's just how much we want to share them on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's this show. We're going to talk about Little Green Wall. That's our big topic, which is a place we have both made mistakes recently.
Yep. I've yet to have a clean line through Little Green Wall.
Ooh, yeah. It's tough. But welcome everybody to the show. We do this, try to do every Friday. Aaron's not here because he's doing Aaron stuff, which is kind of a relief. I mean, it is so draining to do a show with Aaron. And so hopefully I'm not finishing this just tired and frustrated. Although I do understand some people like Aaron a lot more than me. And for those people, I'm really sorry he's not here today. And this is entertainment, not education. Cody, if people want education, where should they go?
Probably Mountain Buzz is the best place. I've never found a single wrong thing on Mountain Buzz.
Yeah. Yeah. For a good education, go to mountainbuzz.com. This is just us like having fun on our Friday, drinking Liquid Death and some decaf coffee and having a conversation. So welcome everybody to this show. And I want to start, we'll just get into it, Cody, if that sounds good.
Sounds great.
I'm going to share a video. First, I want to watch you run Greenwall.
Dude, yep. It was great flows. Good long. We took the long scout. I was really happy about this run.
And this was last week, right?
I got off we put on Tuesday of this week and took off yesterday.
And it says 1,000 CFS. Was that
the
flow on that day?
That was Wednesday.
Got it. So yep. you matched up the day you ran Greenwall with the flow. The one thing I'm noticing is that it takes like maybe 12 hours for the water to get from Kirby to Greenwall. So building that in is a little tricky too.
Yes. Again, that's why it's just so many more tributaries that come in.
Yeah.
They're like, it's a mandatory scout because it's like you could get down there and you could be running door two, or, you know, we had door one this day. So
I was talking to a guide friend of mine this spring and he was saying it doesn't matter what the Kirby gauge says. Greenwall never correlates. It's always, every time you go there, it's different. And you can't say this is Greenwall at 1400 or 700. Every time it does, because of all the things you said, it just never does. You can't predict it based on the gauge.
Yeah.
Well, let's watch your run and we'll commentate a little bit. First of all, what oars are those?
Those are square tops.
Okay.
I run these square tops with oar rights, and then I've switched my other ones to pins and clips. Which I think we'll talk about that as we look at Little Green Wall. I was really happy with this top. We took a lot of time to scout it. Everything was easy up top just because we took the time and effort to make it easy.
Did you scout this entrance pretty carefully?
I did. Well, so the last time I ran this, I got tricked into trying to catch the bottom eddy. And not
that's the eddy right here. Like, hey, let's just catch this eddy.
Yep. And I was with a group and they're like, dude, you don't want to do the long scout. There's a lot of poison oak. It's an easy eddy to catch. And we missed it.
Did everybody miss it or just your boat?
Just us.
Have you ever, it was your first time on a green wall, you missed the eddy?
Yes.
I've seen that happen before too.
Yep. And so it's like, I will always stop at the top And it made, I was so stressed out in that very top part.
Yeah.
There's a lot of holes that you can't really see until you're right on top of them. And so just taking, it's like 10 or 15 extra minutes to do the long scout versus catching that eddy down there.
And it's, it, there is a lot of poison. This year is the most poison oak I've ever seen there. It is, you are going to touch poison oak. There is, sometimes you can kind of dance through and not touch poison oak. You will be touching poison oak. There's no path through without it, but you just have to deal with that.
Yes. Bring tech new. And like, I'm very lucky and I don't react to it.
I get it pretty bad, but also there's this stuff called Zanfell that works.
Nice.
To me, we'll get to this. So we're coming down that first entrance. Let's go back. Cause that was sweet. I think the crux, a lot of the crux of Greenwall is happening right here.
Yes.
I mean, you can't make in between those rocks. People are so nervous. They can't make maneuvers going between those rocks. And if you're pointed left, you'll track left past the next hole.
Yes. And then like just kind of set you up. And I end up driving. I was so worried about the next, not this one, but the next hole that I end up actually almost putting myself in the eddy and touching the rock, which isn't a big deal. It's like I'll take accidentally touching that rock that I'm about to and spinning and having time to readjust than going into that hole.
Yeah, so I've been telling guides, can you see my cursor right now?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the hole you're talking about.
Yep.
It could flip a boat. It can make you swim. Or there's this rock right here that people don't pay attention to. If you go up on this rock, people flip on this rock a lot.
Yeah.
Or hit it really hard and pop an oar, have problems. And so I've been telling guides when we scout it, once you're past this hole on that rock, you can consider yourself a success.
Because even if you swim in the next drop, that swims, it's gonna suck, but it's not as bad as it could be.
Yeah. Once you're where you are now, in my mind, you've done Greenwall.
Yep. Like,
and I've seen so many people make mistakes up to this point that they just compound.
Mine is right when you make that next drop on the crux. Because after that, like, you could put the oars in and you're getting to the bottom. Like, it might not be pretty.
Yeah.
Your boat might not be upright, but like, you're getting down.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you're in your boat right now, the swim can only be so bad.
And with two oars in my hands, just slowing myself up.
Yeah.
And I love this airplane move. Like, it's super cool. And it's exactly like Fawn Falls. So you just practice this move.
Oh, yeah.
About Fawn Falls.
Not everybody does this though. This, you run the same way I do it. I love this. You get left and you ferry over to the right and drop into the thing. So I love this, is such a beautiful move. Like the door is on the right, but now you're going to ferry over and get some like left to right momentum.
Well, and so the reason I do it this way is the first time I tried to drive over and we ended up actually getting wedged. So right where we are now, my right front tube went on that rock and my back tube went on the rock to the left. And so we were broach in the center of this drop. And it was just not, I just don't want to ever do that again. And so swinging in just puts less rubber in a place that could hang me up.
I mean, that's the line. If you try to come straight down to it, you're going to hit a rock. But if you can kind of like get left and then just slowly make your way across, bump that right rock and spin into this, it's pretty fun.
It's a fun rapid. And like what I love about the whole really Illinois is there's really no fast moves. Everything you do is very slow and methodical. And there's really no other rivers that I've experienced that have that many rapids and everything you do is just slow. You got time.
At this level.
Yes.
Once the water starts coming up, that's not necessarily true. Yeah. So I love that you're looking back. And so I had some thoughts here. Is anybody downstream of you right now?
No, we're a two boat trip.
Okay.
And so it's just me and a 16 foot cat.
So if you swim, did you have a plan?
We did. I was really happy about our boat spacing. Mm-hmm. Like throughout the entire trip, I thought like he was just about to make that drop through that crux move right now.
Okay.
Sweet. And so, and it's like, I'm in a high float PFD. We're at lower flows. Like I'm not as worried about my boat going miles if I come out. So, you know, there is risk. on it, but it was something I felt happy with.
Okay. Which PFD is that?
It's the Walmart special of NRS. It's the it's the Zen. It's their new model. They added like a pound of flotation. Mm-hmm. So it's like a 19 pound flotation jacket.
I'm going to call that medium float personally.
Yeah.
Like I think 16 and a half is low, 19 and 20 is medium, and above 22 is, I'm going to call those high float.
I would agree.
But that extra flotation is really a couple pounds when you're swimming is huge. Yep.
And I got a wetsuit on.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So I love that you're looking back. Nice ship there. I love watching good boating.
And then I bumped that rock. I pushed a little bit too early, which happens. And then it was just kind of, I was coming right towards those center rocks and I just wanted to drive over the top of Harvey. And so my angle's a little off to really pull me over. And that's why Harvey got me and then pulled me back. But water was going over the rock, over the top of it. The hole wasn't horrible.
I haven't seen Harvey.
The consequences are pretty low.
I think the river's changed. I haven't seen Harvey be that beat down level in a few years. I think something changed.
Yeah, there's so many rocks that just roll in behind things.
Okay, I have my run up. So I'm going to pull mine up. We'll watch mine really quick. I'm pretty proud of it. So I was ready to go and let me make this big. And we were four boats. My number two boat wasn't. So this whole time I'm nervous. And I'm like, let's go. I mean, you know, you got over the nerves.
Yeah.
And ready to go. And you're like, come on. Like, what are we waiting for? Which is kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's kind of like you get to your scout, you finish your scout, you start walking back to your boats. There's only so many times you can readjust your PFD. Like, right? Like, just...
I can't.
Yeah.
I have a tradition above Greenwall. I always go to take a leak. And I'm pretty hot at that point. I've walked up, scouted. So I usually get some, like walk up to my wetsuit, up to my waist in water and splash my face a little bit and just cool down.
Wow.
Which takes a minute or two. But then I want to go. I'm like, it's in my head. I'm ready. So having to wait is definitely a bummer. So this is 15, a little higher water, 1500. There's that same move between those rocks. And then if you're pointed, same thing, you're pointed left, it just tracks you over there. It's like magic.
Are you actually, you end up going to the other side of the rock at that flow, didn't you?
Which rock?
That top one that you hit and then came all the way left. Or were you in the same spot? You look further over.
Oh, up top?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's look. You know, it's the slot isn't as defined.
Like,
and I've been nervous here a few times where I accidentally go over the left rock.
Yeah. Like,
so, you know, like at the higher level, there's more room here to make, like, you don't have to go through the side of a channel, but like I've before
at this level, that's the exact same spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I've gone over this rock cause I'm just my nerves are there. I'm so focused on downstream that and so now I've learned the key to Greenwall is make that slot, come through that slot clean. And so you go past the hole. If you get that slot clean, you're done.
Yes.
And so in my mind, I'm like, I put all my mental energy on this move here, point it left, drive past that hole. I don't know why the boat tracks so well here, but boats track, missed this hole. Again, this thing it's nasty.
And that's a tricky, like the camera does not do it justice of the move you just made into the hole you hit with your left tube of actually how significant of a drop that is.
Vertical drop or how difficult?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just vertical drop. Like there's definitely like there's some rocks there. There's a hole there. Like it's a pencil move to get in between where you want to go.
And going back to that for a second. So like the guide who was, I had a guide running this first time down. And I actually told him, you really want to go left of the hole after this. You can see the hole down here. You want to go left. And so I told him, you're probably going to go through this channel and pull. Because I just think that makes sense. But after this line, I've done this a bunch. You just track. And at the bottom of the rapid, I was like, story. Like, forget what I said about pulling. Just go through that drop, point left, and the boat will track.
Yes. Get your momentum moving. Same as submarine hole.
Oh, submarine hole's crazy. It took me like it wasn't until my 15th rundown submarine till I was like, all right, that actually does work.
Yeah, I actually went way too far left at the top. Like I just came out with so much speed and momentum going all the way across on submarine hole that I was actually back paddling to get myself to stop before that next hole.
So you went to this is the number one door.
Yep.
At that level. This is a weird level where you have to take the number two door, which from the scout, this looks terrifying.
Yes.
Like, when you scout it, you're like, I don't want to go there. It's just a big steep drop into a big hole. But it goes. I've never had a big problem hole, with it.
And then trying to stop your momentum right here before coming in, like that's a hard, hard move.
Yeah. And a lot of boats. So a lot of boats come in. Let me see. And I mean, I just assume I'm going to hit that rock, trying to dump momentum. If you go see where that rock is, if you go to the right of it, it will suck you down that left channel, which will lead to unhappiness.
Yeah.
Like you really want to get left. So for me, if I bounce off that with my nose and then just keep getting that boat to the right, that makes me happy. We had one boat go left down below and it was a half an hour project. Like 20 minutes. And the feeling here is so awesome. You're like, there's more ahead, but I'm pretty much done. There's Harvey. It wasn't, it could maybe flip a boat now.
But yeah, that's a nice line. Just a point to the left, a lot of momentum.
Well, now that we've, I think that we've shown the YouTube world that we know how to boat. Let's now show some of our struggle. And let's see, this is Little Green Wall. And first of all, those of you that don't know that Illinois, there's a lot of people who email me, how do I run Illinois? How do I get good enough? And do you have any advice, like what people can do to prepare themselves to run the Illinois?
Day boating. Like, I think like if you don't day boat, you're never going to put yourself in a situation that you're going to get the knowledge to run something like the Illinois. Cause it's just, it's mentally draining. There's what, 136, 138 rapids.
There's 200 and something in the book. It labels them with like 230. I mean, if I counted, I'd probably only count 50.
Yes.
But they count every single riffle in the book.
But I mean, it's like there's a lot of moves in there. And so like I felt a lot more comfortable this year of running the wind and then going and then running the Illinois. Because like the Wind River, I mean, I think the Wind River is tougher than Illinois. It's just Illinois, you're on a multi-day, so you have more stuff.
Yeah,
that their help is a lot further away.
Do you think what do you think is harder, Green Wall or Ram's Horn on the Wind?
I would say Ram's Horn, because at Ram's Horn, there's a lot of holes that you have to go through. Everything on it, and it's fast. What the river drops like 100 feet per mile in there, and so you just like it's move after move after move. Where like Green Wall, it's a segmented. Hey, I just need to make this one move, and then I get to the next one. And so there's a lot of checkpoints on Green Wall.
Yeah,
that like doesn't scare me as much. Now and then there's Little Green Wall, which there's no line through it.
There's a line. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I feel like they're inverses. I feel like as flows go up, Green Wall gets harder, and Little Green Wall gets easier.
That's true.
And then as the flows drop, they switch.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's some in between. Like I don't know. I don't have. That's sort of true. There's some weird flows at Little Green Wall that are messy too. But yeah, that's. The problem is you've just done Green Wall and you think you're like, oh, I'm a hero. I just ran this awesome rapid at a clean line. And you go into Little Green Wall, some bravado.
Well, but what even sucks is like, I like held my expectations. I was like, we're two down. We got two more to go. Like, and it's like, had that mentality of like, we're 50% done through the stout. Right. And then we pulled over, we scouted it. Like I checked all the boxes to set myself up for success on Little Green Wall, and it still didn't help.
Maybe it helped a little bit. It's a tough scout too.
Yeah.
Like it's not like most people
you can't see that last drop very well.
Did you walk all the way to the bottom?
I didn't, because like there's that spot where like you get to those boulders and there's really no good way.
Yeah, you can walk to the bottom. You can also, you can catch an eddy below that boulder and then start going left to right, which makes the top harder, but scouting Little Green Wall is annoying. Yeah. It's hard to see. Well, I think, so I mean, for comparable runs, I think the wind is good practice for Illinois. I agree, yeah. The wind. Like if you're in California, the Tuolumne is good practice for the wind.
And then like, I think if you're running it for your first time, like you feel confident in it, this level, the level that I was at, I think like that is an amazing 1400 to 1000.
We're down to like, 800. Even I like the lower flows. 800 to 1400 is the sweet spot.
My first time we did an 850, but it was a dry 850.
Yeah.
And it was tough. I mean, it was a lot lower than the Kirby gauge indicated.
Okay.
I would put it as I've seen videos at 650 and it was a little bit lower than that. So
okay. I love six. I'm a low water technical boater. So for me, I love 650. It is so challenging in the same way that like 2200 is challenging.
Yes.
It's just, but the consequences aren't 2200. The consequences of a mistake are pretty bad. Usually at 650, the consequences, you just get stuck for a while.
Yes.
Like I think 650 is hard and I love being out there. Okay. Let's watch the Little Green Wall. So go back to the Scout Rock. This is the rock you climbed up on to scout, right? You like walked up on.
I don't see it.
Oh, so I have to pull it up. Is it this rock right here you climbed up on?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can eddy out if you really want to make life hard for yourself right here and then climb down the rocks. And then you have to do this move out through here to get in there. So it's like this big pull across to get in the entrance.
And like this entrance is just, I mean, it's super fun. I really, really enjoy it. Even though the ended up outside of my boat, that this top is just like, you kind of pick it apart. Good shit. Like you just kind of ship.
Yeah.
You handle this entrance and you just move on. But what I hate is after this rock, this next set, this lateral just shoves you towards this pyramid rock. We call it Velcro Rock. And last time we high sighted on this rock.
Oh,
and
yeah.
For 30 seconds.
Aaron and I watched that video on the Tuesday show this week. I just want to go back because this is for people that wonder in Illinois, these are the skills you have to have. You have to be able to like take your time in your boat and you have to be able to ship properly. If you're not shipping blade forward, it's a mess because you put your blades in, ship them, and right away they're ready to go. I mean, that's a perfect example of like why you ship blade forward. Go through the rocks, they're in the water. If you're throwing your blades forward or pulling them in, you don't go run the Illinois. You have to develop oar management like this. I just want to watch it again.
I've only been shipping like this for about 18 months. And like all you do is just like every time I get close to a rock, I ship forward. And so it becomes just a natural habit. And it just makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. People are scared of it at first. And it's you don't need to learn it on class three, but you have to have, and like watch, I guarantee your right oar goes right in the eddy. Look at that. Right there.
I miss this one.
No, you do a little, but you could like once you pass that rock where you go right here, you can dip that oar in the eddy and, you know, turn the boat on a dime because the eddy is so powerful. So yeah, that hitting that rock is kind of weird. She did great.
Yeah.
And now what was your plan here?
My plan, I put my boat exactly where I planned. I was like, that's why I was like, wasn't too mad about it. I was like, you know what? I was just made a bad read. I looked at it and I was like, really thought that like, man, I'm just going to put it right on that side of that rock. I'm going to take away the big hole on the right. And I'm going to make my move over to the left just way easier on myself.
Were you going to push the move or try to pull the move?
I was going to pull the move. So I was going to make the drop. And then I was just going to pull back and away because I was already, you know, gave myself 50-50.
So I did this right left next to the rock move a few years ago and had a, so you're coming right next to the rock, right? And this right there, the hole is really steep. I did this, had a woman swim out of my boat, and she freaked out. Which I've never, I'm pretty rare to see. And she was traumatized the rest of the trip. And so because of that, I'm super, like, the boat was did great, but she just fell out, had a bad swim, which is not that bad of a swim, but she just, for whatever reason, freaked out. So I'm really scared of this exact line now because of that experience. And since then, I've been trying to find a better line.
Yeah.
And I think, and I'm not, I've tried a lot of things, 2 feet to the right is better because that hole is really steep there. Like as right, well, you hit the rock didn't help. But that right there, that hole is really steep. And if you're just a little bit to the right, I think the hole doesn't mess with you as much.
Yeah, and then you still have time to act. And do you do that as a pull? Pulling,
I've been experimenting with pushing, and it hasn't. You'll see. Okay. I've been experimenting with pushing, and it hasn't been working for me. So I'm now back to like, this is the move. A few feet off the wall, off the rock, go over it, point right, and pull. That's, I have tried everything at this point, and I'm convinced that's the one. But the boat, I mean, your line was great.
Yeah, that's, the boat.
Like, your setup was perfect because even though you fell out.
Yeah, the boat just did not. And like last time I went broach in between that right side of the rocks too. So it's like I wanted to give myself as much time to get my boat over to that eddy, and it knew.
Did your boat eddy out right here?
Yep.
Oh, that is so awesome. Did you swim left the big rock? Do you swim left or right of it?
Left. I actually, right when it came up onto the rock, I almost had a hand on the boat. And then
where are you right now?
I'm below it. So okay. I saw it go into the eddy. So I swam into the next eddy down and then I saw it kick. And so I just waited. I waited and then I timed it. And then right as the boat was floating down, I just swam out to it.
Eric, good to see you, man. Welcome to the show. Eric, I'm gonna say less than we're gonna disagree right now. Less than 0.5% of the time putting hands forward makes sense. I'm gonna say I get it. Mid shoot on rainy.
Yep,
I get it, 100%. But almost nowhere else. I'm convinced, and there's a few people who out there who think it's okay to do this. I'm gonna say adamantly, it's bad form, and you may disagree with me, but I get it at mid shoot, but it's pretty rare that putting hands forward.
I'll take a person that throws hands forward though over somebody that pulls in or hands down.
Yeah, I mean those aren't even close to correct form.
Yes. So at least they're thinking about
what the oar should do. The problem with hands forward is that you develop that as a habit. And so like when I'm teaching people to row, like not like people who already know what they're doing, they all have this habit. And I can't get them to fix it. And they can never advance past into class 4 because they've already created a bad habit for themselves. And so I honestly can't think of many times when putting hands forward makes more sense other than mid-shoot or rainy. And yeah, I feel strongly about this. My shipping blaze forward habit is so strong. When I go into the mid-shoot, half the time I go blades forward. Because my habit is I think to myself, hands forward, hands forward, hands forward. And I do that wrong. And I was in a video the other day that was on TV of me doing that. My oars are flapping all over because my habit is so ingrained to go blades forward. But yeah, I do it. The only place I ever do it is rainy. What a high back seat have saved you there. Oh, I don't, Jay.
Pins and clips would have saved me here.
Yep.
I like rowing from a seat. I row from a seat on my day boat. Right here, you see that oar come. My hand's still on it.
Yep.
A pin and clip would have kept me in the boat.
The problem with the high back seat, there's a couple of problems. It maybe wouldn't have saved you because you fell out sideways. But if you're sitting on top of a high back seat, on top of a thing, you're sitting so high, you're even more unstable and it messes up all of your oar geometry.
Yeah. If you're in a seat, it needs to be on a frame.
Yeah. Yep. Not like a captain's chair on top of a bunch of stuff sitting high.
Yeah.
I think Pins Eclipse, I know you're switching to Pins Eclipse for a year to test it. You'd be in the boat right now.
Yeah. And honestly, the only thing that scared me is I switched the Pins and Clips on my day boat, and the geometry, because your oar is sitting on top of an open oar lock, and then when you have a pin and clip, it sits on the side.
Yep.
That it moves it the whole half a diameter. And so like I had to adjust all of my oar towers on my day boat. And so I wasn't ready to go do the Illinois with a new setup.
How did you adjust them?
So my day boat is that Longhorn. So those oar towers move.
Oh, do you like front and back?
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, do you want to watch my terrible line at Little Green Wall? Aaron and I watched this on the Tuesday show, but I'm going to pull it up again because I think we're on that. Now, my first, I don't know which GoPro you're using, but I had this on highest level. Look at how stunning that river is.
Like, dude, it's gorgeous. It's the best rafting in Oregon on multi-day, and the scenery's better.
I mean, it's the best raft. I mean, I did the subway for the first time last year, and I'm like, this doesn't even come close to Illinois. Like, I don't see what the big deal is. Like, Illinois has harder rapids. Like, there's no rocks like this in the subway. It's just a forest. And the bugs were out of control. Like, you have to cover your body up in camp.
I mean, we launched June 7th on the subway, and so I'm not looking forward to the bugs, but I am really interested to see that comparison.
So you haven't done it yet either?
No. Nope.
Yeah, I did. If you do the subway in Illinois in the same year, it's pretty easy to be like, okay, yep. Like it's cool. You don't see anybody. That's the biggest thing. And there are some good rapids,
but I didn't see anyone on this trip either. Like,
I think we saw like two kayakers. I can't remember if we did or not. Yeah. In Illinois, you rarely see people too. Oh. Pins and clips and legs wrapped around. Hey, we don't sell slant boards, Noel, by the way, just so you know. Hey, speaking of our sponsor, I'll bring up our sponsor later. Check out my new hat. I gotta show you my new hat. We have Northwest Rafting Company hats that we just got yesterday.
It's looking sweet.
For sale on the riverhardware.com. Well, Todd, thanks for the plug, Noel. Noel taught me how to river guide back in the day. He's one of my guide instructors. Okay, so same rapid, a little more water. This, you know, the higher water, the upper part's pretty easy. You just gotta miss a couple things, kind of float down. And so I'm trying this new thing, and Aaron gave me a hard time about this Tuesday, where I'm front loading, I'm putting a lot of weight in the front of the boat.
Yep.
So I front loaded the boat, hoping I could track left. And what happened was I tried that move a couple years ago, pointed to the right and pulled. And because I was so front loaded, it sucked me all the way right. And so I'm like, oh, what if I front load and point left and I want to see what happened. And I didn't do a good enough job of pointing left. But that boat, man, that could have been a wrap or a flip right there on that rock. And then I went into this little channel that's a mess. At this level, this channel is not that bad. But at some levels, it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, but you know what's sweet is like, you're not in a hurry. I think what like can... And I've done it too, is like you get in this and you're like, I need to fix this now because I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you know what? Like, manage your oars, keep them in your hands. Like,
I mean, that's a common thing where people, when they get into a problem, they're in a big hurry to get that problem undone because maybe they're embarrassed to be there. Yep. They don't want people to see them. I am in a little bit of a hurry because there are boats coming down. There's three, I'm the first boat. If another boat comes in there too, they're going to slam into me. So I'm thinking I do need to get out of here in case somebody else comes in. But I am now like, I'm done with my experimentation here. My move is keep that angle, float down. See how steep the hole is right by the rock?
Yep.
Keep that angle, go like 3 or 4 feet up the rock, go past there and just pull. And evenly weight the boat. Don't front load the boat. I am That's what I'm doing. I've tried every experiment possible. I'm going to live and die by that technique from now on.
All right. I mean, it makes sense. That's what you do in a sweet boat. Load it heavy on the front, and you use the river's weaknesses to your advantage.
Yeah. So I like being front loaded for green wall. I think it makes the boat track really nicely. It goes over the drop nicely. So on the day we run green wall, I like being front loaded, but it hurts me here.
Yes.
And so now I'm gonna go to evenly weighting again, not front loading, deal with the green wall, and then hopefully be set up for success here. Okay. Well, let's take a second. Oh no, I'll watch more video. Then I want to do something else. How do I get out of this? So I have to remove. So let's go back to your video about where are we at? Subhole. All right. This rapid is, I for years pointed to the right and pulled across.
Yeah.
And one day somebody said, you can just point your boat left and it will go left. Which is, it's crazy how hard the boat, it wants to always put you in this hole too.
Yeah. Like I wasn't expecting to launch that far over to the left. But yeah, it's just, what's nice is you get behind that rock and you get into that eddy. And it slows you down, and you really only need to get 50-50 over that submarine rock because it pillows so evenly.
Which one are you calling the submarine rock, by the way? That one right there?
Not that one.
The big one at the bottom.
Is that?
Yeah. You call it the big one here in the middle of the
right here. Yeah.
Yeah. My first commercial trip here, my first trip was a commercial trip. A guy did the same thing right here and went up on this rock and flipped it right here.
Yeah. Yeah. So that undercut is nasty.
On the left.
Yes.
Yeah. And this right side's awful too.
Yes.
It's not anywhere to be. So while we're here, I want to talk throwbags with you. Do you really like this throwbag?
I love it.
Do you see how floppy it is? It just seems like it's floppy around your waist, behind you.
I mean, I could tighten up that the belt that it's actually on.
Well, it's not the belt as much. It's just like a regular bag, a regular circular bag kind of just on your back, flopping up and down.
Yeah, but because of that shape, it throws amazing. You've seen how it throws on the wind. Like it just... I have not found a bag that comes out. I can get the entire, I think it's 18 meters.
Uh-huh.
I can get the 18 meters out every single throw. And I can't do that with any other throw bag I've ever had.
Okay, so let's talk throwbacks for a minute. Because I'm going to try to change your mind. Did you try this bag?
Yes.
And you say you can't get this one out of its holding.
The 18, it's like, I'm getting it out. But like on the palm... It's like getting shock loaded when it's hitting the end because like there's still so much speed in the bag.
How is it different than this because of the shape?
I think because it's wider. And so like it's just like this perfect, and I started doing the overhand throw. Uh-huh. And so it's just like the perfect size for an overhand throw.
So let me tell you, I just made a change in my throwing this week. We were doing an IRF course and we're experimenting some more. I've been doing overhand throws for a while, right? Like the football throw. Well, the new one I'm doing now that I tried is grab this stuff and whip it.
Yep.
You can't. So we've been calling that the trebuchet if you hold it like this, right? If you hold this, that's the trebuchet. But now we're saying if you grab some rope out and you grab this like around your hands like that and throw that, it's so powerful.
Yeah, I would agree probably on the power is awesome, but I've always struggled – I need my arm traveling in one plane.
That's what you do with this.
Yeah. Like
try this. I was really about the football throw. I mean, I've been doing that all spring. I started doing this, and you have to have a bag like either the palm or this one shaped like I call these carrots. This is what the Russians call them. They call them carrots, where it's like narrower down here. And it has this. This is like the leaves of the carrot or whatever. You have to be able to grab this and go like that, I can throw as accurately and farther now with that technique. And I was totally sold on this for a long time. Anyway, an aside. And this is easy to grab too. Like, it's the size of a hand if you're going to do football throw.
Yeah. When I was up there in March, I tried every single bag that you had. It's kind of like comparing boats. They're all good as long as they're not like your traditional boat bags.
They're not all. Yeah. Let's go back. They're all good as long as they're a modern design,
correct. Garbage. Yeah, as long as it's not a boat bag, they're all good. You're just splitting hairs, on it. But that, if you really want a great bag at a very reasonable price, you buy it from the UK at, 45 euros.
So that bag is 45 euros.
I think it's really close.
Okay. With the waist belt. No, there's no way
that's it's not, 45 That's euros. Not with the waist belt.
Hold on. There's no way it's 45 euros.
Yes. They are... The Palm, I think, is some of the most economical, bags out there.
Oh, Palm. What's the name of that throwback?
I'll just Lightning.
Palm, Lightning.
I carry the Lightning and the Bolt, and the Lightning's my favorite.
So, 18 meter. I'm going to try to pull this up.
It's 9.5.
I can't believe that bag is 18 meters. I love that they have webbing at the bottom. I do really think that's kind of cool. 4786, and that's euros.
Yes. And so at the current exchange rate, it's pretty much the same price.
It's pretty. What's the rope like? Is it good rope?
It's great rope. It's on the Lightning. It's 9.5 millimeter rope, and then on the
Lightning. It's 8 millimeter rope, which is okay. The same as the bags I like.
Gotcha.
Order 8 kilonewton breaking strength, which I don't think is great. It's it's fine for swimmers, which is probably what you're using it for.
I would still I would feel comfortable with something.
So this is
that strength for doing a simple 3-to-1. If I'm using a throwback, if I really need.
Hold on. 9 kilonewtons. Let's just go the math really quick. A really strong person pulling really hard can pull 1 kilonewton.
Yes.
You put 3 people on, they're strong. They could probably do 2.2 kilonewtons.
Yes.
You throw them on a 3-to-1, it's actually more 2.2-to-1. We're talking 5 kilonewtons. So you're past 50% of the breaking strength with 3 people pulling on 3-to-1.
All right. So for disclosure, I work with ropes and put people on them that actually matter, right? Okay. It's if I would not, if I'm hanging somebody off the side of a mountain and we're in rescue gear and we're getting patients. Yes. I really care about super strong systems, but one, it's our ropes are wet all the time. We're doing harsh stuff. So it's if I really need to pull, I'm getting my full pin kit out that has 1/2-inch rope.
Got it.
It's maintained. It's clean.
So you're mainly using this as a getting swimmer's rope, and you have a separate pin kit rope.
I will use this and then my simple pulleys, and I'm going to do a boy scout pull or maybe a simple 3-to-1. But I think once I move out of that spot and I'm starting adding more people, then that's when the big pulleys come out, the big rope comes out, because it's an actual problem. Because 99% of the times you fixed it with the first two.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. So you're saying you could use this for a 3-to-1 with a couple people on it, like the cap boat off. But if you're doing the heavy duty pin, you have a separate rescue line, which is you should have, because these throw bags are only 60 feet. That's not going to do much anyway.
No, it gets taken up quick. Definitely if you're doing a 3-to-1 and its access is never good. So it's I carry 300 feet of 1/2-inch rope.
1/2-inch rope?
1/2-inch, yeah.
Wow. So going back to the throw bag, I really don't like yours. And I get what you're saying. Just so that we can be on this throw bag, I import these from Hungary. This is a $152 throw bag. So yours is $50. This one's $152. And so I get that price is a thing. Right. I get that. But I will say this around the waist thing, it just sits nicely in her waist. It feels like, do you feel like yours is flopping up and down all the time?
I honestly don't even notice my throw bags back there.
Okay.
But to Palm's credit, the waist mount that I use is not Palm's. It's level 6. Because when I bought that throw bag, Palm did not have their waist belts in stock due to COVID shortages.
But Palm's is probably the same thing.
Yeah.
Like a strap.
For this argument, it's probably better. Because
because it's made for theirs. So we just did an IRF course, and one of the instructors candidates who is really solid has been wearing the Kokatat. You know how much I love the Kokatat bag on the waist belt. And on the course, it was flapping around, and he eventually lost it. And he ended up getting – he's like, no, this is the bag for sure. Like he was like at the end, like, I want to use that bag. I'm going to convince you someday.
No, I think they're great bags. But wait, would you take – do you think that bag is better than the – is it the Pro Guide or you have like a guide throw bag. I can't remember what it's actually called.
Who makes it?
That company.
You mean different
Super Guide. Super Guide.
Oh, I think, yeah. I mean, I have my Super Guide back here. Well, let me grab it really quick. Talk amongst yourselves.
Cause I think we talked about the soup, like you love that Super Guide and so, that the Super Guide and the Palm are built the exact same.
Yeah, the Super Guide was my favorite before I discovered these. I don't think they are the same. This to me is like, I custom colors. I love this bag. I'm probably not going to wear it again. And because he's not making them. Yeah. I love that it's handcrafted, that I'm supporting a boater. And I forget, does the Lightning have a carabiner pouch?
It doesn't.
Okay, so that's one thing these have. The other thing is the Lightning looks shorter and fatter.
Yeah.
And I think elongated for a waist belt is nice because, like, I hit this on my, when I'm wearing a cap with a seat, I'm hitting this a lot. I want the bag to be more like compact in my body, not stick out as far.
Yeah. And like the bolt is the same profile as that one. Yes.
No, come on. We just looked at it.
No, right, that's the Lightning.
Oh, the bolt. Wait, which one? Hold on. Which one did you wear?
So I was wearing the Lightning.
Okay,
bolt. The bolt was the one I was wearing in March. It's that orange one.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I think for me, and this is also 20 meter too. Having that have it be like longer and thinner, so when I'm wearing a waist belt, it's not so like sticking so far out is kind of nice. How much is this one? It's like 60. Yeah, $60. That you can't beat that price.
No.
I mean, first of all, we're talking between the difference between like the best throw bags in the market. Like comparing this to NRS, like it's a whole like.
Well, obviously NRS blows these out of the water, and we're just second class behind NRS products.
Are you kidding me? Are you trying to draw me into a discussion here? I mean, but most throw bags out there that I'm seeing are like 1995 designs.
Yes.
And there's so many better things there. And I think really the key is like these.
But there's been a huge shift. You have a lot more of these style throw bags in the last 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think this is an example of like the carrot. I'm calling it the carrot now because it has like comes down to like a little bit of a taper, has like the top part. And now I'm telling you, try the whip it technique. It like changed my throwing completely. And it's just having the big wide mouth for stuffing.
Yep.
And then also having like a small thing, like not a big loop hanging off of rope, but something down here to clip into or a carabiner pouch with a clip right there.
And that's what I like about those Palms is that webbing actually is what the rope's connected to on the other side.
Yeah, the webbing's pretty cool. I do like that. I do like that. Okay, let's finish up this silly discussion. Oh, let's go back. So I want to do a word from our sponsor. Our sponsor is River Hardware, where our motto is, if you want customer service, call NRS. We make a few things and we sell what we think is the best quality thing at a premium. Like everything's expensive, but it's also really good. And for those of you interested in throw bags, we have a few sizes available. We have about 15 left. I've been selling like 3 or 4 a week. I can't order any more till August or September. So once they're sold out, I'm not going to restock them. So if you've been thinking about them, get them, because I'm not going to stock them until September.
Yeah, and buy your wing tarp.
The tarp,
that thing's sweet.
Yeah, they're expensive though. Yeah. Like, unfortunately, they're made in the U.S. They're made in Hood River. They're spec'd perfectly. Like, I can't get these made in China. So you're paying a U.S. worker to make these. But yeah, they're epic. But the thing I just put on today are new hats that I'm wearing. So if anybody wants a really expensive hat, we have those for sale too. I'm pretty stoked on these hats. Okay, enough from our sponsor. So let me share. Let me go back. And I want to show you my video from Summary Hold that I'm pretty excited about. Again, slightly different flow.
But like just like 4 oar strokes.
Isn't it amazing? Like it's, I used to work so, I used to be so scared of this rapid. Like right now I'm going to be pointed right and ready to do this massive ferry across. And you just get kind of parallel. Like you get in below that hole. There's a hole catch right behind it. That wave on the right, I think kind of just surfs you over and just points you left. And it just takes you. You have to deal with that hole, correct for that hole. And you're done.
Yeah. And like, for whoever hasn't done this rapid, this thing is so scary from the top. It just like, it looks like there's nowhere to go in the river. You're like trying to decide, can I line my boat around this thing?
And earlier you were saying like, there's 4 big rapids on the Illinois. What are those 4?
I would say like, I call big water day. Like, so second day on a 3-day trip. Fawn Falls, Green Wall, Little Green Wall, Submarine Hole. Like those are like on that day, in my mind, the big 4.
And Submarine Hole is notorious. Like people are scared of it, Submarine Hole. I mean, Naka, what I haven't had a big problem there in a long time. I don't know if it's gotten easier or if this technique of just pointing and pushing through is just making it easier for me at least.
I think like Submarine Hole, if you got it on day 1 and you know where like Panther is, that like it wouldn't be as hard, but you're mentally smoked by the time you get to Submarine.
That's a good point.
Like Whitewater, I'm stoked. I'm gonna put it up online. I took video of all of Whitewater Primer between Submarine Hole and Little Green Wall, and that's one of my favorite sections of water in there. But like you just got done doing Fawn Falls, Green Wall, Little Green Wall, and now you've got what is probably 18 rapids in there. That are
between class 2 and 3, just by 8. Yeah, there's a lot of rapids,
but you're just making tons of moves and you know, you're just always looking up. And so by the time you get to Submarine, you're kind of done. Like, you're just like, I'm ready to go, right? Like, I'm ready to go into an eddy, drink a beer, get my neoprene off, and then go paddle down a beautiful canyon.
Where did you camp your first night?
Pine.
So you also had to go, I think, 10 miles. Just to get to Fawn Falls, and then you have 5 miles of rapids. And so,
So if I would have done it, I had to work. I got off at 6 a.m. the day we launched. And then we drove down. And so we didn't launch till like 2 p.m. on our first day. And so if we would have launched at like 10, I would have gone to South Bend. I would have camped at South Bend.
Oh, there's just 2 of you. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
And because then like you're waking up, and then you have 3 miles between Fawn Falls and Submarine Hole. And so you just have 3 miles of rapids. You can manage that, eat lunch on the bottom side.
Yep.
But we didn't pull in till like 4:35 o'clock at Pine Flat.
Yeah. Camping, figuring out camps is an issue. Appropriately says camps is really hard. There's this camp called Tony's Camp, also just above South Bend's awesome. Like, I love South Bend. Yeah. But it's hard to, I always camp there. I always have 12 people, so it's hard to camp there. All right.
Yeah, and then we finished at Silver Creek. So it's like mile 25.
Like the camp just above it on the left?
Yes.
Yeah, that's where we camped the other day too. Yeah. I love that camp.
That's just great.
Yeah. Man, two people in that camp would be glorious too.
Yes. I it was really windy and I didn't bring a tent. And so I went and shoved myself behind a thing of rocks, and you couldn't even see my cot from where the camp actually was. So
Noel, yes, I have an egg head, and if you consider this fitting, it fits. I definitely have a big head. I know your head's probably a little bit bigger than me because I know you're smarter than me. So, but I'm pretty sure it'll fit you. If it doesn't, I'll give you a $1 refund if you want a refund. We don't do refunds at River Hardware, so, but I'll give you $1 if it doesn't fit. Okay, what's y'all's best recommendation now after more AF training for Rescue PFD? The Walmart Enera Special does not fit well for a lady with my build.
I would say
that's pretty harsh, Heidi. I can't believe she referred to NRS as Walmart.
I know.
How dare you?
That's my line.
Yeah.
I would say, I work as a rescue professional in Whitewater. I've never used my harness outside of training. And so I actually cut my harness out of my Zen. And because I don't kayak anymore. So I have no need to actually have a rescue harness.
I'm with you. I don't think rafters need these harnesses. I think they just make people look cool, and they actually detract from the PFDs by adding a little bit of weight. I can see the value for kayakers or professional rescuers. You know, like you're a professional rescuer. There's a tool you might use as a land-based professional rescuer.
But when you have a boat, you're just going to get in and paddle the boat over.
Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about a rescue PFD. But the IRF training didn't teach me anything about, we didn't have any more discussions about PFDs. But I will, while we're Palm, go back to Palm PFDs. Let me bring this up.
Yeah, I really like those Palms. I like the setup on them, but I don't know how they would fit.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're asking the wrong people about PFDs for ladies, for women. I don't think either one of us are in the right
people to ask about it. What sucks is the really well-fitting PFDs, in my opinion, are Astrals.
Mm-hmm.
I will still wear my Astral once I stop doing big water.
Yeah, so I just got a Justin Bieber, the NRS. You saw me get the yellow one. I just got that for because we thought the Illinois was going to go to 2,000, 3,000 maybe. So we were super nervous. I wore my high water PFD. These Palms are pretty sweet. They're not I would call them medium float. The Nevis is the one I have. And I really love this PFD. The only downside is it's not Coast Guard approved. Yeah. So you need to carry another PFD with you. Like you don't have, by law, you don't have to wear a Coast Guard approved PFD. You have to have a Coast Guard PFD approved PFD with you on the trip. They're approved in Europe, but it has these really cool pockets right here that zip in the side to put things. The clamshell pocket is comfortable, and the bigger one has more flotation. So in the US, when they like Astral, if you get an extra large green jacket, it's the same green jacket, but with bigger straps.
Yes.
Here, the extra large
has more, more flotation, more foam in it.
Yeah. So I think this one has 19 pounds of flotation. And so I think it's a good option. And Palm makes great stuff. I was kind of bagging on the throwbags a little bit. There's great throwbags. I just really think these are better. That's all. But this FXR, I hear, is really good too. I've heard some great things about the FXR, and their newest PFD, which I'm also hearing really good things about, is this Riff.
Yes, I've heard really good things about them.
And so this is not a rescue PFD. They're going to make a rescue PFD version of this, I think, in like 6 months or so. That's what I heard from my friend who works for them and works with them. And so I think this is the future. And so I'd recommend this one, but just knowing that it comes from the UK, it's not approved by the Coast Guard, and that's an issue. My green jacket isn't a part anymore, but for swift water rescue courses, a rescue PFD is required. Maybe you're taking the wrong class, Heidi. I mean, I would take a Swiftwater risk. It sounds like you're taking a Swiftwater rescue course for first responders. And if that's what you want, and you want to be a first responder who shows up to a scene and does rescue, like, I mean, Cody's a firefighter. So like, you would do that type of rescue as a firefighter, right?
Yeah. And so and then we wear the Mustangs. That's what we wear at work.
Yep. And those are awesome PFDs for that type of thing. Pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're probably not going to fall in, but they're there just in case. I think, but if you want to, I would choose to take a Swiftwater rescue course. I would call it whitewater rescue. Take something like Wet Planet does classes. I mean, they might require a rescue PFD, but I doubt it. Where they're focused on rescue for boaters using boats, like Wet Planet do a rescue class, do Swiftwater Safety Institute. I can't imagine them requiring a rescue PFD.
Yeah, and because you're only done show live bait once.
That makes me kind of mad, actually. Reading this, not mad at you, Heidi, but like, that's why so many people have these rescue PFDs that they don't need, because they want to be safer, and so they take a class that requires them to buy a PFD that doesn't make them safer.
No, and on some that you don't really use, because like, really, the best thing you get out of a rescue class is swimming whitewater. I've done so many of those classes, and the most I get out of it is the days we spend an entire day just swimming a river.
And Cody, you taught rescue for a while too, right?
Yeah, I still do. Yeah.
I mean, we're on the same page here, right?
Yep.
Would you, when you taught Swiftwater rescue courses, did you require people to have a rescue PFD?
So it's hard because I'm teaching other firefighters.
But if you're teaching, didn't you teach boaters too?
No, I've never taught like private boaters. Okay. But like if I was teaching private boaters, I would, and they showed up with a rescue PFD, I would ask them to take it off. Because you just don't need it. I just really think that they get more in the way than, and I've never used them for 13 years outside of a training scenario of showing somebody how live bait works. But like, live bait sucks. It doesn't make sense.
We could talk about this for an hour. We're not going to.
No.
I could tell you why I'm so against them. Every time I bring this up in a class I'm doing, I go, hey, I've never heard of an example of somebody using them in the real world. And the only examples people have given me are rescuing equipment. We had to go get a paddle. We had to go save a raft. And I'm like, why are you tying yourself to a rope to save equipment? That's insane. There's one example that came up this last year where a commercial trip on the Rogue didn't tie their boats up scatting blossom. They tied their boats to each other incorrectly. And they floated down with guests on them and got stuck in blossom. And the guides somehow used a rescue PFD to get to the boats. That's the only case of it that I know, but they weren't directly saving it. Well, who knows? It was kind of a rescue. But my take is, why don't you take another boat down to them instead of putting yourself on a rope?
Yeah. Or I would rather swim just by myself.
Me too. I'll swim to the boat.
Yep.
I don't want to be tied to a rope. It's so scary. And so, Heidi, first of all, to this comment, this show is entertainment. Please, this is not education. Cody, if people want education, where should they go?
Mountain Buzz.
Yeah, ask Mountain Buzz. Like, that's I don't even know why people are watching this show. They should be on Mountain Buzz right now just learning how to boat. So if we make fun of your PFD, it's during entertainment. Like, yeah, so don't worry about your green jacket. It's low flotation, but luckily you're a normal sized human, and you're athletic, so you can swim. I'm gonna say you should get more flotation, but the green jacket's fine. Do not buy another PFD just for this rescue class. And I would get this Palm Riff, and then call other rescue classes and say, hey, do I have to have a rescue PFD? Because if I do, I'm not gonna show up. And a lot of these rescue classes, they need people. I mean, they're not like they'll say that's fine. You don't need one. Like to buy a rescue PFD just to take a class to me is insane. Sorry to rant on this, but it just really frustrates me. Yeah, you won't use it. And half the people I know wearing their rescue PFDs have a long tail. You know, the tail on the end of the thing.
Oh, dude, that that is a pet peeve of mine.
I don't say anything to people, but as soon as your tail is longer than your fist, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Like it's just, you're wearing something for show or because if somebody told you to buy it, like
the same person that has a 7-inch tail on the rescue PFD is the same person that's going to tell you that you have a foot entrapment. Like, oh, your strap's out of place. It's no, man, just.
I need to do a Gear Garage video about people who have their straps too long. You should do a private Whitewater video.
Like, yeah, because there's some people at work that I've harped on a few times. I'm like, no, man, you got to cut that off.
I mean, at work, is it a little different? Do you guys own your PFDs individually? Like, are they sized to you guys? Or
yeah,
I can see that.
Yeah, so because there's like I actually work on a Whitewater rescue team. So there's 12 of us that are Whitewater rescue trained. And so we all have our own PFDs, dry suits, helmets, everything, because it's like, it's all our stuff.
I've heard of other firefighting teams where the firefighting unit, what's it called? When is it?
The whole department.
The department, whatever, owns a bunch of PFDs, and you grab one when you're going to go, and then when you leave the department, you get somebody else uses that PFD.
Yeah.
And so I understand why it's hard then, because you don't want to cut them to a person's size, but you also don't want to be using a rescue harness with a long tail.
But, you know, that's what I love about the Mustangs is that rescue harness is replaceable. So it is actually, you can remove that rescue harness. And so if I cut it for me and then I retire and somebody else is using it and it doesn't fit, then you can just put a new harness on.
That's a good point.
So, but with that said, those Mustangs are really uncomfortable. I don't like them as much. I like the Zen actually better than my Mustang.
I mean, I'm not gonna
Mustangs are better.
I wouldn't boat. I don't think I want to boat in the Mustang.
No.
Especially because it has a handle in the back that's an entrapment. That's kind of weird. But if I'm gonna be a on scene rescuer on the shore,
I'm in floods, because that's what we're really trained for is floods.
Yep.
And I want a 25-pound vest.
Yeah. And when it does look cool. Like when I'm sure when you're like if you
I,
show
I hate it so much.
If you show up to the scene though with like a palm like red, like your cool PFD, people won't take you seriously. When you show up with that thing, say, like, oh, the team's here.
I don't know, they might take you more serious. Because they're like, man, this guy actually knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but maybe. Thanks for all the info, not really needing a rescue PFD. I mean, so Heidi, I think there's two things. I'm going to call them whitewater rescue and swiftwater rescue. That's how I'm going to define it. Swiftwater rescue denotes a team of first responders like Cody going from their department. What's it called? Like your firehouse or whatever?
Yeah.
Going from their firehouse to a scene and performing a rescue. That is what I'm going to call swiftwater rescue. Whitewater rescue is when a team of boaters are boating down a river and something occurs on that trip. And they're solving that problem using their boats and their skills. And the victim is usually like dressed correctly with the PFD. Like when you show up to rescue somebody, they're not in a wetsuit or a PFD. Like you have a whole other set of issues. So I'm going to say if you want to join Cody's team, take a swiftwater class where they require you to have a rescue vest. If you want to be a more responsible boater that can help people in your team, if there's something goes wrong, you want to take something that's more of a whitewater rescue type class, like a Sierra Rescue one for boaters, Wet Planet does those classes here in Oregon, something like that, taught by a boater, not somebody who's going to make you go on a tether. Sorry to bend that rant.
Your new rescue class.
Yeah. Our class is aimed towards that, right? Yeah. Like, We specifically say in our class, like, we will not teach you tethered rescue. Like, it's not, we'd rather use that time. There's three things that we're not focusing on. One is shallow water crossings. I think way too much time is spent that for the benefit. We don't have you people swim over logs because it takes a lot of time. And then you think, people actually say this in safety talks. Oh, if you see a log, swim over it. Like no. Let's just talk about swim away from it. Do not teach anybody to swim over a log. Teach them to swim away. So we don't swim over logs and we don't do tethered rescue. And we spend that half a day on those three things on prevention.
Yep.
How do we not get in problems to begin with? Which not many classes really go into. All right. Have you seen the 4.6? Yeah, those are – have you seen those, Cody?
No.
Dude, let me pull that up. This is for talk about rescues. PFDs. Look at these bad boys.
Yeah, it even has a nice little patch and a radio.
Yep. Let's see. I've heard of boaters using this R3. This thing, I kind of like it weirdly. I don't think I'm going to get it and boat with it, but I like all the moly on it.
I'm big if I really like that center pocket. Like PFD, yeah. I wear it needs to have that top center pocket.
So I've been wearing the Justin Bieber, and I can bring that one up. It's the NRS Guide High Water, something like that. I forget what it's called. But check out, in Heidi's words, let's go to NRS.com. I mean, go to Walmart. But that's what Heidi said. We didn't say that. No. We're just...
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Heidi, how dare you? How dare you? Where did you write that again? Heidi calls this the Walmart NRS special. That's just rude. That's rude. Anyway, we'd love NRS to be a sponsor someday. So this is the PFD I've been wearing for high water. And they have a newer version of it. Oh, here we go. Shop new version. They added the mole right there, which is kind of cool. They put these little nipple rings on. I'm not sure what they're for.
Yeah.
But my flip line goes in this pocket. So there's two pockets here. And it's not the best. And if I don't want to wear a knife on the outside of my PFD, getting to the knife is really tricky in those pockets. And so if I want to perform some sort of important rescue, it's hard to access my flip line and knife, which is a bummer.
And that's what I really like about that Zen is it's U.S. Coast Guard approved. It's got the storage of it. It's got those zipper pockets that go off the side. And then it's got like the fleece like lined where that's where my flip line lives. So I don't have to unzip anything to get to my flip line. It's just right there on my chest.
Yep. Now this PFD, I don't know if you can see right here, these are little hand pockets. And so I think you could maybe put your flip line in the hand. There's like a fleece hand pocket. The problem with the hand pockets I realized on the Illinois is your oar likes to get caught on them when it's coming up. And so this wasn't designed by a boater. This was designed by a committee somewhere trying to sell more PFDs. But it's the only option for good flotation out there. There's nothing else other than that 4.6, I think. NRS Zen, let's look at that PFD. This one, is this the one?
Yeah.
And you put your flip line in this little pocket right here.
Not the zipper. There's actually then underneath that zipper pocket, it's like a fleece hand pocket.
Is it that gray I'm seeing right there?
Yep.
Okay.
Probably. And then, so it's the same as like a blue jacket where there's just kind of that empty space behind. Yeah. So it's actually where that black is behind that. It's in front of that zipper.
Is that zipper another pocket?
Yes.
That's pretty sweet.
It's really sweet. So like my phone goes in that zipper and then my flip line goes underneath. And then the flip out pocket fits two carabiners, my pulley and my knife. And snacks.
And it has more.
It's like
18
it's like,
pounds.
Yeah, 18, 10.
I mean, I'll wear the Justin Bieber, but I have a hard time wearing an NRS PFD. I don't know why, but this is better than a green jacket.
It is.
For rafting.
Astral needs to make this.
They need to step it up.
Yeah, because like I like the adjustable shoulder straps too, because like Astrals always sit really high on me.
Yeah.
And so. I love that I can get that thing really low.
I think the thing everybody needs to realize with Astral in particular, they're not making PFDs for rafters.
No, they're kayak because like think about it, when you're kayaking, you're sitting, your tunnel's really high, like just everything needs to be high and out of the way.
When I switch from kayaking to rafting, I'm always tightening and loosening those straps. And so like the Astral Green Jacket, although all you rafters have it, it was not designed for rafters. It was designed specifically for hardcore kayakers. And so it looks cool, and so people get it. But this, I mean, to me, this seems superior for rafters for sure, in every way possible.
Outside of, you can definitely tell Astrals are made better.
Yeah.
Like, Astrals are awesome. Like, I don't think anything has on the, like, their quality.
But I'm telling you, for function, those zipper pockets.
Oh, yes, like, are awesome. That's where my phone lives.
That just changes the game. And the fact that it's 18 pounds of flotation. Yeah. Like, it's just, this is, for rafters, you should all be getting this PFD. And you may throw it away every couple of years.
I think Heidi hit on it. So it's the exact same life jacket size-wise with just change of straps. So like somebody that's smaller, even me, like I'm a big guy. I'm a 215 pound guy and it feels bulky on me. And I couldn't imagine being, a smaller person like my wife's size and fitting in this comfortably.
But I think for Heidi, for kayaking, the extra flotation is going to annoy me because you want flexibility. Yeah. For rafting, I don't mind a big bulky PFD as much for the flotation. And you put 18 pounds of flotation on Heidi, she's going to float really well.
Yeah.
You put 18 pounds of flotation on me, it's going to make a difference. But I mean, 18 pounds to Heidi is like 23 pounds on me. I need more flotation. This is a sweet PFD.
I've been really happy about it.
Wow.
And it's on sale.
I wonder why. Okay, so let's get to things. Haldor is a rescue instructor in Europe. And so, Haldor, thank you for the backup. And Haldor, I just spent a week or a little longer than a week with Mark and had a great time. We won the R2 race. We're the Oregon State R2 champions because we won the Clackfest in the R2 race. So we're saying that just counts as winning Oregon. So it was fun. Kudos to Cody for a great term for PFD. What was the term?
I don't know. Huh. But I'll take it.
Any chance to get your lady guides to chime in? I mean, I don't tell them what to do. So don't ask me to ask them. You could just ask them. Say, hey, any female guides that want to chime in on higher flow PFD recommendations? The problem is, there's not really any higher flow. There's only one higher flow PFD that's reasonable other than this one. This, I'd call this medium.
Yeah.
This and then the Justin Bieber. I mean, almost everything else is 16 and a half pounds. So it's either this or the Justin Bieber. Yeah. I'm headed to Iceland in September. So if you want to, it'd be nice to meet up with you when I'm in Iceland in September. Well, Cody, I think we got through everything and more.
Yes. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, well, what would be sweet is if I could kick Aaron off the show and have this be Cody and Zach's Better Than Mediocre show.
Yeah, well, and then just slowly Private Whitewater is just going to put you out of business.
Yeah.
So, if you want to see mediocre rafting videos and some gear reviews, go to Private Whitewater on YouTube. I just do it for fun. Just to share the stuff that I do as a private boater versus where like Zach's got, you've got guides. And so the stuff that we deal with as private boaters is just a little bit different of trying to get groups together. And I've really enjoyed it. I'm going to try to step it up this year with more videos.
I love your show. Like I love watching it. I'm super stoked on it. And so right now, everybody turn this off or go, you're on YouTube right now. Just go to the search bar, type Private Whitewater. It'll take you, it'll show you the thing. Click on his channel, subscribe. And we're mediocre. You're better than mediocre. You're like, you can actually call yourself, is adequate better than mediocre?
Man, I would take adequate in a heartbeat.
You're definitely adequate. We're working towards adequate. We're working on it. All right, a couple more questions. I'll talk to Tate. Tate's busy working right now, so it's hard to get her to do more things. JJJ, it doesn't seem like you made Clackfest this year, but I got four more paddles. I got four first place paddles. It was a very successful Collectfest, that's for sure. Well, I'm going to close this one down. Thank you very much for watching. Like, subscribe, do all the things. And right now, I'm going to turn this thing off. And Cody, stay on because we can talk afterwards. When I say goodbye, it doesn't mean we have to say goodbye. But everybody stop right now. YouTube, Private Whitewater.